Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me read to you guys a tweet. Shout out to my guy, BH In-Depth Mo. In my opinion, he is a must follow on Twitter for all your royal stats and information. The attendance last night at Kauffman Stadium, it was 13,798. That is the lowest that the Royals have had for a night game in July, since July 28th of 2021. What do we think that means? Now, to be fair, there was a lot going on yesterday. If you had the choice of going to the Royals game yesterday or going down to Power and Light to watch the United States play soccer, which one would you have chosen yesterday? The U.S. won. It was fun and exciting, and it is the happening hip thing to do right now. That is not the Royals. They lost 4-0 yesterday. Rob, they're getting 13,000 on beautiful summer nights? First pitch was at what, 6:40 yesterday? Weather was beautiful, not a rain cloud in sight. Tickets are dirt cheap now at this point. I mean, I'm getting all kind of emails on flash sales when it comes to the Royals. They're doing 2-for-20 deals like it's Applebee's out there. They're doing 48-hour flash sales. They're doing no fees. They are begging you to walk through those turnstiles. And Kansas City, they have made their choice. How much of this, Rob, do you think is frustration with the product, frustration with how this season has gone? Or how much of this do you think is that the World Cup has just taken all of their juice away? There are watch parties all around this city to go watch the United States play. And they were packed. You saw Power and Light. You saw what Sporting Park looked like. I'm sure there were 10, 15, 20 other watch parties that were happening. I mean, this same thing's going to happen again on Monday. They have another Monday game, so they don't play on Friday.
It's a day game, so it's a little different.
Okay, a little bit different. My apologies. So, but also, on July 5th, in the middle of the day, the sun, are you going out to Kauffman Stadium to watch them play baseball? They're getting 13,000 people when the weather is beautiful. Oh, y'all mad. Not like little mad. I mean big mad at the Kansas City Royals. This is the most powerful thing that you can say. I'm not saying that people aren't keeping up with the Royals. I'm sure people are still watching them on Royals TV. For you to be getting Tuesday April numbers, and you're getting those in the middle of the summer, that should tell you everything you need to know right now about the Royals and where the interest of the city is right now. The interest of the city right now is not with the Royals, not at all.
I definitely think the World Cup stole some of their juice.
But I think it stole all of their juice yesterday.
But I think the larger problem is the city has tuned out of the team. Because, now I don't know this, it's a hypothetical. If you're telling me the Royals, like the Rays right now are 50-33. If you're telling me the Royals were 45-38, 50-33, or even like 40-40, I think there would still be an appetite for Royals baseball despite the World Cup being in town. But I think the World Cup stole all their juice because fans want something to do, and the Royals are not giving them that. There is nothing worse in sports to me than having your fan base be apathetic. And right now, what the World Cup has shown me is Royals fans are apathetic. They don't care about what happens night in and night out with your team. They are not following it. Do you notice outside of this topic, we have not really talked Royals baseball on this show? Have you seen the text line fill up with how dare you? No, apathy has set in and the World Cup stole all their juice because fans were looking for something to do this summer and the World Cup was their oasis.
Yeah, text line 913-586-7965. I would say that the text line is pretty split right now. Text line, I think the USA match had a lot to do with it. Somebody else, I think it's Team USA, and two, people don't want to sit out in the heat to watch a bad team. Somebody else says, this has nothing to do with the World Cup. Fans are tired of a lifetime of being disappointed by the front office, no accountability. Let's not make excuses for the Royals. This is not for the World Cup. I think it's a little naive to think that the World Cup has had no effect on the attendance, especially given the fact of yesterday. Yesterday, if Power and Light could hold that many people, they would have got 30,000 people out there to watch the game there yesterday. They got 40,000 people out there. Like, if they had closed off Power and Light and opened up the Sprint Center to come in there, they would have filled up Sprint Center yesterday to watch the game. The Royals cannot do that now at this point. So if you're telling me that there is only a portion of the city, like there's only so many people who are going out for a sporting event, some people are going to choose to stay at home, I think it is clear that Kansas City made the decision as a whole across the metro. I think Kansas City made the decision yesterday. We are watching soccer. We are not watching the Royals. We will go back to watching the Royals. But if you're arguing that it wasn't the World Cup, I mean, before the World Cup got here, the Royals were doing a little bit better in attendance. Now, they were doing great, but, I mean, they were getting 17,000 people out there. They were getting 16,000 people out there during the weeknight days. Now, on the weekend, they're always going to do better. And when the Cardinals are in town, a lot of those people are coming in, Cardinals fans, etc. But, Rob, 13,000 people out there yesterday? That's an incredibly low number. Rob, that's how many people they got on Cinco de Mayo on May 5th. That's how many people they got out there. That's how many people they got out there on April 20th. That's how many people they got out there. Usually people, once it starts to heat up, people go out there to Kauffman Stadium. People made it a choice to not go to the Royals game last night.
I'm not letting the hot weather be an excuse for the Royals. It's not. I know FanFest didn't happen last night, but FanFest will happen this weekend. It's going to be hot this weekend. What do you think does better, the Saturday Royals game or FanFest? FanFest might outdraw the Royals. That's a legit conversation for a non-USA game. Sunday night, England-Mexico. What does better, FanFest or the Royals' day game against the Phillies?
This is where I disagree. Just a small amount. If they cap FanFest at 25, I think the Royals do better on the 4th of July. It's just a little different. America, baseball, people are going to go out there for the fireworks of it. Now, if you're asking me on Sunday, yes, more people will be at FanFest than will be at the Royals game, 100%. If you were telling me that England and Mexico plays on Monday night at 7 o'clock and the Royals also play on Sunday, more people will be at FanFest than will be at Kauffman Stadium. There's no doubt in my mind that will be the case. More people will be at FanFest on Monday night to watch the United States. More people will be at Power and Light than will be out there for that Royals day game on Monday. People are not taking off on Monday after you already got a holiday to then go out to Kauffman Stadium at 1 o'clock to watch them play baseball in the middle of the day in July. Absolutely not. They'll get 12,000 people out there on Monday night for that game.
That's why I think the two things have a, you know, connection. I definitely think it's a little bit of both. I think the World Cup being in town definitely stole all their juice, but I think that juice was available to be stolen because they've given fans no reason to want to go out there.
For sure.
I think Sunday's a better analogy. If it was Mexico, England, and the Royals were good, I think the attendance would be comparable. Hey, the Royals are good. It's a day game. I'll go out to Kauffman and watch them play the Phillies. The Phillies are interesting. They'd get 20, 22, 25, maybe. It would be similar numbers to FanFest. But you don't think on Sunday they can even compete with FanFest for a country that it's not like the home country is playing on Sunday night. It's two countries that we do not live in, and we think it's going to outrate the Royals by a large number.
There's no I think.
They will. I'm serious. They will.
There's no I think. They will. You just saw what Power and Light was like on Tuesday. You don't think that's coming back out there for an even bigger game? It's USA. It's Mexico, England? Yes. Power and Light will be to the brim. What time people you think start getting there? If the kickoff's at 7, what time do you think you got to be inside Power and Light?
5.
4:30?
I think you'll start seeing like clips on social media.
It'll be a
four.
Line wrapped around the building to get there.
It'll be up to your apartment.
FanFest will be packed too.
Oh yeah.
FanFest will be jam-packed
Fan
on
Fest
Sunday
might
night.
Fill up faster because it will open earlier.
For sure.
And it's, you know, bigger, the whole thing.
So, yeah, no, I just want to go through that. Shout out to BH Indep Mo. 13,798. That is the lightest summer crowd that the Royals have had since July 28th of 2021. People absolutely spoke with their wallets. They spoke with their free time. They spoke with their discretionary income. It was packed last night around the city. Sports bars, P&L. People are not checking for the Royals, which has allowed them to be able to fly under the radar. And some things that we usually would be discussing, we are not talking about it right now because that is not where the public's interest is. Not at all. All right, coming up on the other side, I'm going to try to sprinkle in a little bit of basketball. A major trade has happened. Jaylen Brown no longer plays for the Celtics. He now plays for the Philadelphia 76ers. I got a question. I'll tell you what that question is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive.
My man, Carrington Harrington.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5. The Fan. Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Let me tell you guys, whether it's baseball, football, soccer, whatever it is, our coverage here on 96.5 The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years, guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. Rob, do you think we can talk a little bit of basketball? I know how you guys get when we mention the NBA, but I mean, if we can't talk about a player who is top five in MVP voting that gets traded away, what are we doing here? Just a little bit. We won't talk a whole, I promise you, we'll get back to the Royals. We'll get back to the World Cup. We'll get back to it. Just a little dash of NBA conversation. Now, I know you guys like sad fans. Here are Boston Celtics fan reacting to the trade that sent Jaylen Brown to the Philadelphia 76ers.
We all hate it. We feel like it's bad for the city. I don't really know what Brad Stevens was thinking.
It was a small salary dump to send him to a massive contender of the Celtics in the East. It's not the correct move at all.
No, the fact that it went to the Sixers itself for a pretty injury-prone Paul George, It's honestly ridiculous.
We all hate the Sixers. It's probably the worst team he could have gone to. Yeah, like, sure. We blew a 3-1 lead. It's horrible. This is a really bad day.
I think Jaylen Brown, what he did for the city, what he did for the people, the organization, bringing a finals MVP was everything. And trading him away for Paul George, I don't know about that one. That's a bummer.
All right, Rob. Here's my 1.5 Jaylen Brown takes. This is the first one. I think most basketball fans have the exact same opinion. You got Paul George and you traded him to that team. Like, if you're looking at the roster of the Philadelphia 76ers, that's a pretty strong roster. You got Joel Embiid. You got Jaylen Brown. You got Tyrese Maxey. You got VJ Edgecombe. Like, that's a really, really good team that should play in important basketball games next summer and should be able to compete with the New York Knicks. I think most people have that opinion, but I don't think we give Brad Stevens enough credit for this. I think he's basketball Theo Epstein. Do you know how hard it is to go to back-to-back Final Fours and back-to-back national championship games at Butler? We're not talking about a Kansas. We're not talking about a Duke. We're not talking a North Carolina. I'm not saying it's not difficult to do it at those places, but you understand it's much easier to do that at North Carolina than it is at Butler. He did that as a college coach. Rob, he won 77% of his college basketball games. He was a phenomenal college coach. Tomorrow, Brad Stevens said that he wanted to get back into coaching. He could get whatever job he wanted. Whatever job he wanted. Kansas should fire Bill Self if Brad Stevens said that he wanted to be the next coach at Kansas. Bill, hey, we appreciate everything you've done. We can't move forward here. We got to make sure we lock up this guy. I think that much of Brad Stevens' ability. He then goes on to be an NBA head coach. Was a pretty good NBA head coach, and then decided to move into the front office. They've been to, what, 2 NBA finals since he's been there? They won an NBA championship. He drafted Jason Tatum, drafted Jaylen Brown, made a lot of other moves. He is one of the top basketball voices over the last 25 years. Am I crazy for thinking he just knows something that we don't know? You know how frustrated you have to be to simply have the, we don't care, we'll trade you anywhere. Like, usually when these conversations happen, we're thinking, oh, no, there's no way the Chiefs would trade him to Oakland. Oh, there's no way the Chiefs would trade him to the Chargers or the Broncos. Like, why even suggest something like this? I know that NBA divisions aren't the same as NFL divisions. They trade him to a team in their division and the team that eliminated him from the postseason and just said, here, and got back Paul George and draft picks. Like, the Celtics seem fine with moving on from Jaylen Brown. Now, you would think if you got anything remotely close to this from another team, if it was me, I would have sent Jaylen Brown. I'd have sent him to Portland. I'd have sent him to New Orleans. Hey, you want to go have your own team so bad? Go play for Sacramento. Why didn't you take the draft picks? You could have got Darius Acuff. Imagine the draft pick compensation you could have got 2 weeks ago if you had made this deal, if you were the Boston Celtics. So one part of me is like, man, I wonder what Brad Stevens knows about this situation. Like, he's too good of a basketball mind to make a move that appears to be as short-sighted as this one. And the next part is, to kind of bring this here local, Rob, we don't talk about this. We don't talk a lot of NBA. Joel Embiid is the least accomplished great player in the NBA. I know he has an MVP. He has an MVP because they got tired of giving it to one person. Kind of like what happened to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we can't keep giving you MVPs. We got to find somebody else to do it. Not saying he wasn't balling out. That's Jokic should have won the MVP that year. They gave it to him out of voter fatigue. It really wasn't until Joel Embiid started complaining about MVP that they eventually gave it to him. He's never made the conference finals. Think about all the conversation we have about guys that can't win rings. James Harden's played in the NBA finals before. Charles Barkley's played in the NBA finals before. Patrick Ewing's played in the finals. Joel Embiid's never made the conference finals. Trae Young's done that before. Think about the guys that have done that. It's go time now for Joel Embiid. It's go time. If Embiid is who I think he is, and at times he can be the best big in the NBA this side of Jokic, he can be one of the top five, top 10 players in the league. If he's who I think he is with this much help and this kind of talent, Philadelphia should be serious contenders. But can his body hold up? Can he be on the floor? Can he play in the postseason games? We got a long time till we can answer those questions. But this says a lot about Brad Stevens to me, and this says a whole lot about Joel Embiid, and it is go time. They need to make a serious run for a championship.
Circling back to Brad Stevens for a minute, and yes, I agree with you on Joel Embiid. I actually think he's number four on the big four now. Like, I think Edgecombe's more important. I think Maxey's more important. I definitely think Jaylen Brown on that team is more important. Like, he's become kind of like a role player of sorts. A great role player, but a role player. Circling back, though, for a minute to Brad Stevens, because I think he's one of the better basketball minds. I think he's like modern day Jerry West. Can you explain to me what his larger plan here is? Because I don't know what the deal is with the picks. Maybe they're unprotected, maybe they're protected. I don't know.
It's getting out of the salary. I mean, if you want like what I think on the bigger scale is, I think it is Jaylen Brown is about to make a substantial amount of money. We want to get out of this deal. He is in the middle of a 5-year, $304 million contract. And I know this is a heavy NBA conversation. I think you're starting to see that some of those GMs, they're starting to be kind of turned off by those deals. And you just understand, especially now the way they've changed the finances in the NBA, being locked into one of those deals and also trying to build an 8-9-man roster that you need to win a championship today, it's hard to do both. It is hard to build the depth that you need to make a playoff run and pay Jaylen Brown $60-something million a year. You can't do both.
But so the way to do it is to have great draft picks, which is what the Sixers did with Edgecombe. That's how the Sixers are able to get a wet round it.
I agree.
Like, that's why I'm trying to understand this. It's not like we see trades in the NFL or NBA where it's like, oh, a lottery pick is going back to the Celtics. Remember when they eventually drafted Jason Tatum, they've been hoarding unprotected lottery picks. That's how they also got Markelle Fultz, but they drafted those guys. Like, I don't understand the larger plan here, because you don't like Jaylen Brown. You can't pay him. I get that. You gave him to a contender who has the salary and the roster set up where they can pay him. You should have offloaded him to Utah. It does not make sense to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. On the surface, this is not a trade that I would have made, and I would have pushed harder to then get the Giannis deal if I was going to end up doing it, because you get Giannis back. Getting back Paul George, who has broken down ligaments, and expecting him to stay healthy and help you win a championship just doesn't really seem like a good strategy to me. But again, maybe I'm giving Brad Stevens too much credit. Brad Stevens has been too good at this for me to think that he would make a deal in which they would get fleeced as much as it appears. I completely understand why Philadelphia would do this deal. I still don't understand 24 hours later why Boston would make this trade. I don't understand why they would do this. I would not have done this. But I think Brad Stevens is really smart. So let me see how the rest of the plan plays itself out. And Philadelphia, they got 2 years to try to win a championship. I think we all know Joel Embiid's body ain't holding up too much longer than that. You got 2 years to try to win a championship, at least with Embiid as your number one. And if you're telling me you got a team with Embiid, Jaylen Brown, and Tyrese Maxey, that's your big three. That's a strong team that they have put together in Philadelphia. Let's see if Embiid's good enough to get them over the hump, and let's see if they can make a run.
Do you think it falls on Embiid to get them over the hump, or does it fall on Jaylen Brown? Because I think when this trade...
I think it falls on Embiid.
I think Embiid became the second, third scoring option on that team, which means the pressure kind of falls off. Because, like, even last year in the postseason, I know they came back from 3-1 to beat the Celtics. They were relying on Embiid to be great in those games.
I think Embiid is the best player in the Eastern Conference if he is healthy.
Huge if they're healthy.
I'm 100%. But I'm saying if every player in the Eastern Conference is healthy and playing at their best, I think Joel Embiid is the best player in the East. But you're right, not healthy. So, yeah, and there's a bunch of other guys I'd rather have than Joel Embiid. But if Embiid is available, I think the Sixers can be very, very good. But, I mean, he couldn't stay healthy through the second round of the NBA postseason last year. His body started falling apart. He could play one game and then not play the next. So that's why I think Philadelphia had to push some of their chips in the middle of the table to try to do this deal, to try to see if you can maximize these last 18, 24 months. You might have a Joel Embiid still playing at a relatively high level.
I guess that's, to wrap this back around, that's the bet I think Brad Stevens is making, is that they're going to go all in. They will falter, and those first-round picks look better and better over time because the aging superstars don't usually have a long shelf life. But it seems like a massive risk to me by Brad Stevens on the surface.
I want to play some audio for you guys here. So this first audio clip that we're going to play from you, this is from Mark Clattenburg. Is that how you pronounce his name? Mark Clattenburg. He is the Fox Soccer rules analyst covering the World Cup. So he is the rules guy. You know, we see them during
Mike
the
Pereira.
NFL season. Yeah, he's the Mike Pereira, Gene Steratore. He's one of those individuals breaking down soccer. He does not agree with the decision to call the red card in yesterday's game.
Yeah, when I watched this in real speed, I didn't think it was much. I thought it was just a coming together of two players. And what you do see is the Balogun's challenge does catch his opponent on the back of the leg. And then when it comes down, it catches his ankle. And that's when the twist of the Bosnia-Herzegovina player's foot twists underneath him. The problem you've got is, to reach a criteria of the red card, it has to be some speed, there has to be some force, and there has to be some malice. This lacked that. But what it does have, which is what the element of the VAR is hiding behind, is it endangers the safety of the opponent because of that foot-on-foot challenge, which could have acted and ended with a broken ankle. So what they've done is they've looked at the consequence of the challenge. However, in my opinion, this didn't endanger the safety of the opponent. Balogun doesn't even look for the foul. It's one of them where it happens in a split second. He puts his foot down and catches the opponent. It was an accidental challenge. And for me, this did not reach the criteria of a red card, and it shouldn't have been a VAR intervention.
I have two fixes to replay. I would love if they just got rid of replay. Honestly, if you want my opinion, I think sports will be better. And I know the argument, we got to get the calls right. They get calls wrong all the time with replay. They get calls wrong at an incredible clip, even though we got to get all the calls right. But if you are hell-bent on they have to have instant replay, I think these two small fixes would change it. Number one, a real shot clock. You cannot look at the same thing for 5 minutes. No. You've seen it. You've seen every angle that we have available. If we had a real shot clock, and you got 2 minutes, we're going to take a commercial break. I know we all hate commercials now. We're going to take a two-minute break. We're going to come back, and we are going to have a ruling on what is happening. That's number one. Number two, you have to watch it in real time. You can convince yourself of anything if you keep watching something in slow motion enough. If you continue to loop the same thing over and over in 4K in super slow motion, You will find whatever you are looking for. And this is one of my biggest arguments when it comes to instant replay and why I think it is anti-sport. When you watch instant replay, you are usually watching it through the guise of what's wrong and not what's right. When we watch the NFL, we are usually watching it with the guise of he didn't catch it, as opposed to, wow, look at this amazing catch that he had. That's why they keep showing it to you 18,000 times in super slow motion. I know that I am on an island when I think the best thing to do is to get rid of instant replay. I know that. I understand that they're not going back. But if two simple fixes would make replay a much better experience, and I think help us figure some of these things out. You cannot slow it down to minus 18,000 speed in super 4K definition. No, that is not the way that sports work. Also, a real shot clock. I remember when we used to have the argument, it has to be clear, conclusive evidence in order to overturn things. And somehow along the way, we lost that. It doesn't have to be clear. It doesn't have to be conclusive. It doesn't have to be obvious anymore. We just go off vibes on whether or not we think it should be changed. So those are the two things, as Commissioner Carrington, I would want when we get to instant replay.
I agree with you. We were talking last night at the Gathering of Souls. So many of these sports have just grinded to a halt and have become unfun because of replay. The end of a college basketball game is the worst. Soccer now, we have the going to the monitor, we have the goofy ref goes to the square. And now we have like geographical breakdowns of an angle, of someone's hand offside, the hand someone else leave them onside. It's terrible. And you remember that Final Four, we waited for 20 minutes to see if the ball grazed that player's shorts in the, I think it was Virginia Texas Tech game.
It's so stupid.
It's gotten bad. It's gotten real bad.
No, I agree. I've been on this side for quite some time. I have. I've been on this side for a while now that instant replay for the most part is a net negative. And sports would be more enjoyable if we got rid of instant replay. Games would move faster. You're still mad anyway at the end of these games. They have instant replay in soccer. Are you not mad about the red card? In fact, with no instant replay, we would have been perfectly fine. They didn't call anything on the field. They didn't call anything. It's not like they originally called a red card. They then watched it to confirm it. They called nothing on the field. They then stopped it, and we went from no penalty on the field to you are ejected from the game and cannot play in the next game. That's a wild turn of events. You haven't seen that fast of a turn of event on a Lifetime movie. How do we go from nothing happened to everything happened? I didn't see a penalty, and now the best and most important player on the team is now out for the next 120-something minutes of action. That's a wild swing of the possibilities. Two options. Shot clock. We have 2 minutes. Let's take one of these hydration breaks. You got 2 minutes. Let's come back. And when we come back, we have to have a conclusion. We have to push the game forward. And you can't keep watching these things in slow motion. I'm telling you, it will be better. I believe this is the manager. Is this the manager?
Mauricio Pochettino?
Yeah, him.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, all right. Well, you knew who I was talking about. I knew that Tyler Twellman. I know he's not the manager. Or Bradley Wright Phillips. How do you pronounce his name?
Mauricio Pochettino.
Okay, that's too many words.
Just call Mauricio.
Too many letters, too many big words you're throwing at me. I don't know what they mean. I don't know how to pronounce them. The guy that looks like Russell Crowe from American Gangster. Him. You know the guy I'm talking about. He looks exactly like Russell Crowe's character on American Gangster. I know that he is the manager for the U.S. team. He doesn't think that it should have been a red card.
For me, it's about to see the intention. If the intention is to damage the opponent, okay, I understand. But that never was, because a normal action in football that you are, you know, fighting for the ball and your feet land, no? That was maybe a little bit tough, the scene to watch, but I think never was intentional. I think for me, that action never was, it's never red card, never.
Rob, I'm starting to realize how we got good at soccer. We started getting real ringers. The manager's from Argentina.
And he's coached in France and in England.
Our best players from Britain. That's how we turn things around in soccer. That's how we got good. We had to start outsourcing it. You know, people like, oh man, imagine of how good we would be if we used all of our best athletes. You know, we don't got to do that anymore. We're taking other people's top athletes. Hey, if you can't start on that team, hey, no problem. Come play with us. You're good enough to play on our team. That's how we got good at soccer. We're just taking other people's products.
I mean, you're joking about it, but the honest answer is the U.S. Soccer Federation said it's time to take a European approach to soccer, and they've gotten better ever since doing that.
No, they absolutely took a European approach. We're taking people that didn't even live in America. Hey, you grew up in Europe. Do you want to play for us? I heard your great uncle grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. I think we can get you eligible. That's what we're doing. This is turning to Texas high school football, and we started building mailboxes in the middle of nowhere so we can get you eligible to go play for Midland Lee. I like this. We started doing what the rest of the world was doing. We got to quit getting them kids from San Diego to start playing. We got to start getting other kids to start. This was smart. We opened up the borders when it came to soccer. That's how we got good. This is smart.
I believe both goals were scored last night by people who carry dual citizenship.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's how we got good. Somebody said the men's national team is turning to Lee Summit West, for sure. You don't got to live in Lee Summit. Where do you live, kid? Oh, you were supposed to go to Central? It's okay, we'll figure that out. Don't worry about that. Can you play? Can you shoot? Can you score? You know what? We got a home for you here. Why don't you come be a Titan? I like that mentality. I like this. I'm telling you, soccer is more like all the other sports when you start to think about it. All right, Taylor Twellman, he was on the show. Is he friend of the show?
Not yet.
Okay, he's got to come on more?
He's got to come on more.
I actually saw him pop up on my Twitter feed a couple of days ago. I had never heard of the man, had no clue who he was, and then I clicked on his page, and I saw he had like 400,000 followers, and I was like, oh, hey, I know him. I was like, I know this guy. Hey, we're friends. We're pals. I've talked to him before. Here is Taylor Twellman. He was on the show like 2 weeks ago. He thinks this was a shameful red card.
I cannot believe that was a red card. I put it out on social media and I looked at it 20 minutes ago, and obviously it's grown. I just asked FIFA a simple question and screenshot Lionel Messi and this. And all I said was, well, where was VAR on that? Where was VAR?
It's ridiculous.
Right? The exact same play. Look at the ankles.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Look at the still photos. They both look ridiculous. And
the only difference,
frankly,
is Messi's actually looking at the player, where Balogun's got his back to the player.
Yeah.
And Balogun's trying to play the ball, and mm-hmm. Lionel Messi wasn't. It's truly, truly next level incompetence for that to be interpreted as a red. Now, still photo, absolutely. It looks like he just broke his ankle. 2 seconds before that, yeah. 2 seconds after it, it's nowhere near that. And so that's where the nuance of VAR is really kind of driving me nuts in this tournament.
Now, I don't claim to know a whole lot about soccer, but I do watch other sports. The level of penalty that you get for hitting Patrick Mahomes is different in the level of penalty you would get for hitting, you know, Malik Willis, for example. Like, we've seen it before. I know Kansas City is a little sensitive to that. Like, we've seen it. Hey, you breathe on Pat wrong. Hey, they throwing a penalty, man. He the money. We got to protect the money. So I understand the reasoning to do it. But comparing anything that any other player in this tournament does to Lionel Messi, you're probably only going to upset yourself. You're probably only going to make yourself frustrated. So, yeah. I'm not surprised that we found a highlight of Lionel Messi doing the exact same thing that one of our players did, and somehow nothing happened to Lionel Messi and everything happened to this guy. That actually makes a lot of sense to me. You don't got to understand soccer to understand that. I'm sorry. You don't got to understand that. I did see the play that they were talking about. It was pretty similar. Also, another American experience. Whenever there's a no catch called in one game, finding that play and then saying, wait, if that wasn't a catch, why is it a catch in this game? Also a very American experience. I'm starting to really come around on this soccer. I get it. It makes a lot of sense to me the more I compare it to other things.
It is very similar to other sports. It is, for some reason, people reject it as, like, you know, some outsider nonsense in America, but it is eerily similar to the sports we already watch.
Yeah, I'm just telling you. Everything about it makes sense. You're telling me the top story is an officiating conspiracy? People think that they did this because they're scared of the U.S. making a deep run in this thing? Oh, I'm qualified to have that conversation. I didn't know what the term brace meant a couple of days ago, but if there's one thing I know, it's complaining about the officials. Oh, we've been doing that a long time over here in this country. We've been doing that a very long time. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, I think that the World Cup being here has just really shifted the focus for some stories we would have really been talking about if the World Cup hadn't been here. I'll tell you what one of those are next. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison, the go-to show for dating advice you didn't ask for.
If you got to ask your girl to help on the bill on Valentine's Day, you've done something wrong.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5. The Fan.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are getting more information about Travis Kelce's wedding. Variety, they have some of the people on the wedding guest list. In fact, Rob, you and I know multiple people that are going to this. I imagine Patrick Mahomes will be there. I mean, I haven't seen that he will be there, but I'd be very, very surprised if he was not there. I'd be surprised if he's actually not in the wedding. And our dear friend, Mitchell Schwartz, he was flying to New York today. I don't know why else he'd be flying to New York if it was not to attend the wedding.
I saw it on Instagram and I put two and two together. I said, good for him.
For sure. I knew they're pretty close, but yeah, I didn't know if they were going to the wedding. I just didn't ask.
I mean, if the wedding
is... He just had a second kid, so salute to him.
If the wedding is what all the people are reporting it is, if you're not in the top 2,000, I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, I agree, 100%.
He's definitely top 2,000.
So these are some of the people who were invited to the wedding. Beyonce, Jay-Z, Selena Gomez, Sabrina Carpenter, Ed Sheeran, Ice Spice, is it the Haim sisters? The two women that she was sitting next to at the Knicks game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I know who they are. I don't know who they are.
I saw that they were at the game. I don't know who they are. I imagine they're very famous people, but I don't know who they are.
I know them as their friends of Taylor Swift. They probably have something else they're going on with.
So they're like Maverick Carter?
They are. I'm Googling them.
Yeah, I know they're at the Knicks game.
A pop rock group from Los Angeles. Frequent collaborators with Taylor Swift.
Okay, I didn't know. I wasn't trying to hate on them. I had never heard these people before until they were at the Knicks game.
I don't know their songs, but okay.
Zoe Kravitz, Adam Aaron. He is the CEO of AMC. Remember, she had that big deal with AMC for the Eras Tour. Miranda Lambert, Kane Brown. I feel like you and Kane Brown would be besties. Remember you wanted me to ask Pat about Kane Brown that one time? You're like, ask him about him. I was like, okay, for you,
I will. Kane Brown was at 1587, like the week before it opened. I was like, you got to ask about his relationship with Kane Brown.
Yeah, that's one of your favorite artists, for sure.
And instead you asked something like, hey, on third down, you threw a bad pass.
No, I did not. We got the audio of it. Don't play me like that. So Kane Brown, Little Big Town, Kelce Bellarini, Maren Morris and Lucian Grange. Those are just some of the people that are invited. If it's 1,000 people, I'm sure it's way more famous people than that. But yes, those are just some of the famous people, according to Variety, that have been invited to Taylor Swift's wedding that is tomorrow at Madison Square Garden.
That list that you read that they've acquired from Variety sounds like people that got the invite from Taylor Swift's side. Like, was there someone on that list you're like, oh, Travis invited them?
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. Maybe Kane Brown.
Yeah, Kane Brown.
Yeah,
I can
maybe.
See. That's the one.
Yeah, a possibility. But yeah, I mean, these are all mostly music people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's, like, eventually we'll see athletes that were invited to this. And like, oh, yeah, of course, like, Cam Newton was there. You know what I mean? I'm sure it'll be those. Marshawn Lynch was at this thing. Like, I'm sure we'll start to get more of those names that pop up as well. But yes, these are some of the people that were invited to the wedding. One person I did not name, Rob, I'm very curious to see how you and your wife handle this. Harry Styles was invited to this. Now, I did not know this. I had to Google this. They dated from November 12th to January of 2013. Doesn't really seem like dating to me.
That's like 2 months. And I mean, I don't know her life.
That's dating? I can use the term that I would normally use, but if you were just with somebody from November of the year and you guys broke up in January, I don't know if I would consider you dated that person.
No.
I'm sure it was a fun 7-8 weeks. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was great.
That's a fling. I believe the term is fling.
I'm seeing here people dub this as a whirlwind romance is what they called it. Okay. All right. Not the term I would use, but okay. Hey, I get it. Doesn't matter now. They both have moved on with their life. This is my question. How did you and your wife handle exes?
They weren't invited.
I mean, she's inviting her ex.
Now, I would say, I can't speak for Harry Styles and her relationship. None of our exes and us ended on super amicable, hey, we're still tight type of terms. So, like, it wasn't a situation where it's like, hey, remember that toxic ex you had in college? Ring him up. Let's bring him in. I think Harry Styles might be a little bit different category.
Okay, I'm just asking. I mean, I'm sitting here reading it on Variety, and Variety is saying that some of the Taylor Swift songs he inspired. So you would think, I mean, I've heard enough of these Taylor Swift songs.
It depends on which songs, though. Because, like, Love Story could be one where it's like, that's not a bad breakup.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's some song called Out of the Woods.
Never heard of it.
I'm just going to guess if it's a song called Out of the Woods and it's about somebody that you only dated for 9 weeks, I'm going to assume it didn't go that great. It's not called Into the Woods. It's Out of the Woods. You're now free from this person. I'm just going to assume that things didn't go so hot. But you know what? Let bygones be bygones. Maybe they patch things up here. Hey, time has passed. You've had great success in your career. I'm having great success in my career. It was a fun, short little fling that happened. We're both adults now. But yeah, Harry Styles got invited to this thing. He will not be able to attend because he is currently on tour.
Let me ask you this. How many of the Kelce teammates do you think are invited? Because he's not bringing all 52 teammates. That's just not happening. Like, Which people made the cut?
I'd rather play this game for current teammates.
Yeah. I'm not talking about all time. I'm not gonna sit there and be like, do you think Jody Fortson made it? But like all time, like current roster, how many do you think made it? Because I think the number is like 15 of the 53.
That's a great. Who's the most controversial person you think was left off the list?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because, like, there's no chance Rashee Rice is at this thing. He might not even be able to go. He might have to stay in the state of Texas until it's time to go to work.
That's not controversial. He can't go.
You think Xavier Worthy's there?
Isn't his significant other and Travis and Taylor Swift, like, friends or something? There was something. I thought there was some connection there. I think Xavier Worthy made it. Mecole Hardman, I bet, made it. I would be surprised if
Mecole Hardman is not at the wedding.
Did anyone from the running back room make it?
The new running back room or the old running back room?
The current running back room. Anyone make it?
Probably not, no. I could see Kareem Hunt being there, though.
I can see Kareem Hunt being there.
Or Pacheco. I could see both of them being invited to the wedding.
I don't think Tyquan Thornton made it.
I don't know if he's talked to Kenneth Walker yet. They might not even talk to each other yet. They haven't even worked together
I'm trying to think who a controversial no would be. You think Nick Bolton got an invite? Other side of the field, yeah. Been teammates for a while?
I think so. Yeah.
I think Noah Gray's a yes. I think
Noah Gray's absolutely.
I think the tight end room's all a yes.
Yeah, because you got to think, like, any of the players' wives that we've seen take pictures with Taylor, we've seen her take pictures with everybody, but we've seen her take pictures with Mecole Hardman's wife. We've seen him take pictures with Noah Gray's wife. Mm-hmm. Yes, they absolutely were invited.
By the way, not to change the subject, but Richard Deitch, media athletic person has the.
This obviously can't be that important because you didn't hit the button for it.
You want to hear the preliminary ratings numbers for the match last night in the World Cup?
Let me play the guess.
I have the average and I have the peak. You can guess both.
19.8, 21.8 the peak.
Fox preliminary numbers, according to Richard Deitch, are an average of 24.4 million viewers, peaking at 31.8.
It's a huge number.
And the 31.8 came from 8:45 to 9 Central Time, which would have been toward the end of the match.
That's a really, really big number. I got to compare that to an NFL game. That's a really, really big number.
Basically, 25 million people watched the match.
Yeah, no, that's a huge number. Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, you would have to assume on Monday night at 7, they do noticeably better than that. Now that we're having the Spain conversation, if they end up playing Spain, and that would be on Saturday?
Friday the 10th.
Friday night?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they end up playing Spain, and that's the game that we get, oh boy. they're going to do a pretty crazy number if that's what we end up getting. Wow, that's a very, very good number. Save that, and let's look it up, what that comparison to an NFL game. I'd be very curious to do this. And if we find anything else about Taylor Swift's wedding, we will certainly pass on the information. Variety, they're all over it. All right, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour of the show, there is a Royals topic that I want to discuss. There is something that we would be talking about if the World Cup wasn't here, but it has kind of fallen under the radar. We're going to go through the World Cup ratings here in just a little bit as well. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.